The fifth reading of Parshas Truma, we already have a Mishkan more or less in place. Here the Torah is going to tell us about how the inner chamber has to be divided into two parts, a holy of holies and an area which is designated as holy. And we're going to hear about the furniture, the artifacts of the Mishkan and their placement. Chamishi, chapter 26, verse 31, V'asisa faroiches, you shall make a curtain. This curtain will be fashioned of tcheles and agamon and telas shani and sheish mosar. These are all the different materials that we've already talked about in great detail. The special turquoise-like color wool and the reddish wool and a purple wool, a deep red wool, and we have this linen, this spun linen. All of this should be maise cheshev. It should be the work of a master weaver. Yasa isam kruvim. They should be made with cherubim. So the kruvim show up here again. What kind of kruvim are we talking about this time? Well, let's take a look in Rashi. Rashbam says, just nice pictures. Pictures. But we'll see about this in a moment. Let's take a look. Rashi says, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Paroiches. Paroiches, says Rashi, is Lashoin Mechitza. It comes from the terminology of a barrier, a distinction. U'b'loshen Chachamim, in the language that our sages use in the Talmud, a pargud. Dover ha-mavdil ben ha-melech u'bein ha-om. This is something which serves to make a distinction between the king and the commoners. In other words, the concept of a paroiches is not to serve as an actual door. It doesn't actually seal off the inner area. It's just a modesty panel. Big difference. It's not made for the purpose of sealing or protecting the inner chamber. It's made for the purpose of modesty. There's a very interesting halacha that the korbanos cannot be offered at night, only during the day. And that begins from the shechita, from the slaughtering of the animals. And the halacha says that in the Beis HaMikdash, there was a door, and the door had to be opened because it says lefnei ha'edos. It says that had to be done before the testimony. So if the door was closed, it didn't work. So then comes the question, what if the curtain was still closed? Because it was a curtain that was cast aside as well. So that's not an issue, it says. Why? Because the curtain is not a door. A curtain is a modesty thing. A curtain doesn't mean that another area is actually sealed off or locked off or considered to be a separate domain. It simply means that you can't look. And that's what we're talking about over here. I think that's really the emphasis here in the idea of pargud. Rashi is making it clear to you this is not a wall. This is a panel. This is about just stopping people from seeing. Tcheles v'argomon, Rashi says, kol minu min ha'yakofel b'chol chut v'chut shisha chutin. Each one of these strands was comprised or woven of six strands, so it was quite thick. The cloth is very thick. And then you had this sixth woven strands, and then all of these strands woven together. So you're talking about a very, very dense curtain. Maisa Cheshev, Rashi says, I've already explained this, Kvar Pirashti, explained it earlier in the beginning of this chapter. Shezohi Ariga Shoshtei Kidr. So this is the kind of weaving which appears differently on either side. Vahatsiyurim Shemishnei Evoreha, the pictures that appear on either side in a daimon zelazeh, cannot be identical, or wouldn't be identical. So really we have two kinds of weaving. Some kind of weaving, you have a beautiful picture on one side, and the other side, you have just a hodgepodge. It doesn't look like anything. And then you have another kind of weaving where it's on both sides. There's something beautiful on both sides. But this is a masterful job where you can have both sides have different and beautiful pictures, but also different pictures. And this was something that took extraordinary talent. Kruvim, are these the little babies? Same kruvim. So Rashi says, Tziyurim shobriye siyaseba. Creatures, some kind of creature you make over there. Doesn't really talk about exactly what it is. Elsewhere, Rashi says that on one side there was the image of a lion, on the other side there was the image of an eagle. And it's very interesting that oftentimes major cultures and civilizations and countries have adopted one of these two, either the lion or the eagle, as their mascot, if you will. So this is the business of the distinction between Kedusha and the other side. The Meshech Chachma says something very interesting. He says, why do you have to have different pictures on both sides? He says, the point would be to demonstrate that the level of holiness on one side is not akin to the level of holiness on the other side. So it's not only something that stops you from seeing past a certain point, but it's demonstrable that there's a distinction between one side and the other. They're not one and the same. Okay, let's move on to verse 32. Venasata Isa al Arba Amude Shitim. This curtain will be hung on four staves or pillars. Pillars more like it, which are made of acacia. Mitsupim Zahav. The pillars themselves have to be gold plated. Vaveim Zahav. The hooks are also made of gold. Al Arba Adne Chosef. And they are, so to speak, inserted into four sockets of silver. Let's take a look in Rashi. Arba amudei, four poles. Arba amudim tkuim b'toich arba adonim. Here you have four poles that are inserted into four sockets. V'unkiyus kavuis behem. And on the top of these poles, there's a hook of sorts. And there are akumim l'mayla. They're bent upwards. So basically you're talking about a hook like this. A hook that's bent upwards. So what could be contained in the hook that's bent upwards? A curtain rod, a curtain pole. That's exactly, it's as simple as that. So the unkius bent akum l'mayla l'hoishav aleihem kleinos, so that a slender pole can be placed upon them. And this is the rod shereisha pareches karach bay. And that rod, you have the curtain is hung from it. V'unkius hein havovin. Unkiyas are what's called a vavin. Sha'arekim im vav. They're literally made like a vav in the Hebrew alphabet. Only the foot of the vav would be stuck into, would be inserted into the actual pole. And the little peak coming up, it wasn't an enormous amount coming up. The little piece coming up was just a slightly up, like the head of the vav. So there was like the vav was relatively lengthy, like longer, and slightly coming up. And that way, it held the rod of the curtains right in place. Now Rashi says, let's talk about the size of this pareches. Let's talk about this curtain. Arko eser ames. Its length was 10 amot. And it was placed l'roch b'shom mishkan. It was placed in the width of the mishkan. V'roch b'shom and its width. Which really, okay, it should be the other way around. The length would be, the width would be Eser Ames. V'rochba here means the length. Is Eser Ames is also Ten Ames. Either way, you basically got yourself a square. And the purpose is, it's Kegovan Shal Krashim. It's the height of the Krashim. Perusa Bishlish Shal Mishkan. This curtain was hung one third into the Mishkan. So the Mishkan was divided into two thirds and one third. From the curtain going inward, you had exactly 10 amot. So the Holy of Holies was a square of 10 amot. And it had a curtain in front of it that was the size of a square of 10 amot. Now, what about the outer area, what you would call, I guess, not the foyer, but the front sanctum, the area, the front of this hallway, of this hall? So that was Esrim amot, that was 20 amot. Nimtza Beis Kodesh HaKadosh, the Holy of Holies, Eser. Eser is a square, 10 by 10 amot. Shenemar, as it's written, V'nasata Sapareches Takas Takas Akrosim. This curtain will be placed underneath the clasps. And the clasps are Mechabrim Shtei HaChoyvres Shol Yiriyes, the two groups together of these coverings, the curtain coverings which we spoke about in the previous readings. V'roicha V'achoyveres, the width, one of them, each one of them is made of, was comprised of, five individual pieces, and that came together to make two big pieces, which were clasped together. And therefore, since they were each five, they were made up of, there were four amot wide each, you have Esrim Ami of 20 amas. When you spread them over the roof of the Mishkan, min ha-pesach l'mayriv, from the door up to the west, going due west, kolsa, b'shnei shlisham Mishkan, it ended two-thirds into the Mishkan, because it was 40 amot in entirety. The Mishkan was covered. The Mishkan was 30 amot. And the last 10 amot of the curtain hung over the back of the Mishkan. V'hachoyveres ha-shenis kisis ha-shlish ha-mishkan. The second set of curtains, or of coverings, covered the back third of the Mishkan. And then it was toli la-achayrov l'chasis ha-krashim. It hung over the back, covering over the boards. So when you looked at the back of the Mishkan, you didn't see the actual walls of boards. You saw the curtain. And in front of the Mishkan, There was an open area for you to be able to enter into. So now you know how the space was divided up. And here, at this point, the Torah tells us, so what? How are we going to set up the furniture? Now that you have an asata, it's a paroiches, tachas akrosim, you set up the paroiches underneath the clasps, the evig, sashomomi, based on paroiches. You'll bring over there from the house, so to speak, to the paroiches, meaning in that inner space that's sequestered and set aside, you'll bring there as Aron HaEdos, the Ark of Testimony, the Evdila HaPareiches Lachem, Ben HaKedosh, Ben Kedosh HaKadoshim. So the curtain then serves to divide between the area known as holy and the area called the Holy of Holies. Okay? Good. Now let's move out of the Holy of Holies and let's move into the front hallway, the front area. Rashi says, "V'nasata sakapeiros alodin eidus." We will place the covering on the ark, the kodesh hakadoshim and the kodesh hakadoshim. Okay, the area is set aside; it's curtained off. The ark is in place. The covering is there. Beautiful. Now we're going to go outside the curtain. In the front hall, the samta is a shulchan. You place the golden table, that special table, michutz lapareches, on the other side of the curtain. And the menorah will be corresponding to the table. So you got the table on one side and the shulchan on the other side. And this will be altzela hamishkan teimana. The menorah will it will be on the side of the mishkan on the south side. V'hashulchan titen altzela tzofen, and the shulchan will be on the north side. Incidentally, the notion of Chava being created from a rib of Adam Rishon because it says Tzela is patently ridiculous. And the proof is right here. What does the Torah call a side of a Mishkan? A Tzela. Because a Tzela means a side, not a rib. The Mishkan didn't have ribs. It had a side. Like the Gemara says, that the first human being had two sides. A male side and a female side. Anyway, that's just like my pet peeve. So going back to, going back now to this business of how we stage the Shulchan and the Menorah. Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi says this is the way they should be arranged. Shulchan b'tzafon. The gold table is placed on the north side. Mashuach ben hakayis latzfoni, set back from the northern wall. Shtei ameis umechtzo. Remember, you're dealing with an area of 10 amot wide. So the Shulchan is going to be on the north side, set back 2 amot from the wall. Menorah. The menorah, on the other hand, bedarim. If the shulchan is on the north side, the menorah will be on the south side. And it also will be meshucha min hakayis ladraimi, set off from the southern wall, shtei amos umechtza, 2.5 amot. Umizbeach hazov, and the smaller golden altar, which we haven't yet talked about, nosun keneged avir shebein shulchan menorah. This is placed in the space, equidistant space, between the shulchan and menorah. So you have 2.5 amot set off this way, 2.5 amot set off this way. You have the space of the shulchan and menorah itself, and the remainder, which is whatever, 4.5 or 4 amot in between. And there, in that space, in the equidistance, right in the middle, you place the shulchan. Mashuach kima klape mizrach. This was all set forth a little bit towards the east. So kind of you had a triangle. You had your menorah and you had your shulchan, and then set forward in the easterly direction was the small mizbech. The kulam nesunam and achatzia mishkan lefnim. And all of them were placed in the half of the mishkan inside. So this area, as we learned, was 20 amot long. So it's all placed in the back 10 amot. Ketzad. Oydach ha-mishkan, how does this work out? The length of the mishkan min ha-pesach le-pareches. From the door all the way to that modesty panel, that curtain, esrim amot. You have 20 amot. Hamizbeach v'ashulchan v'amenoira meshucha min ha-pesach letzad meira. They're set back from the door because the door was in the east and they're facing west. They're set back in a westerly direction. Eser amos, 10 amos. This is how the Mishkan's furniture, if you will, was staged. The Sephardim says, why do we have this emphasis on the menoira being opposite from the shulchan? He says, you know, there's a famous pasuk we recited whenever the Torah gets raised. Orech yomim b'yamina. Long days, length of days, on the right. So he says the menorah corresponds to the Torah, and therefore it has to be on the right of the Aron. So the Aron, if you're so to speak standing inside the Kodesh HaKadoshim, if you were the Aron, the menorah would be on your right, and the Shulchan would be on your left. And the Chizkuni says that the emphasis on the south is because the south is always warm, and that's the sunny place. At least that's what we tend to think of it. I guess if you're in Antarctica, you think of that as north. But for most of us living on this side of the equator, the south conjectures images of light and sun that we could all desperately use these days. And so that's why the menorah, which represents light, is on the south side, whereas the Shulchan is more on the north side. And now we're going to take a look and see a manuscript that the Rebbe authored in the early 40s. And in this manuscript, the Rebbe speaks about the staging of the Mishkan and how it should speak to us in our life today. Let's go to page Resh Chav Beis, Simen Lamed, the 30th entry in Parshas Truma. We just read the Rashi now, and so the Rebbe begins to comment. HaShulchan v'hamenorah, the table and the menorah, Reimzim l'shnei sugim ba'avodas Hashem. They represent two very distinctly different dimensions in the service of God. HaShulchan, the table represents the way we serve Hashem, ve'emtzois ho'inyonim hagashmim, by means of material things. For example, eating for the right reason. You can eat as a glutton. You could stuff your face. You can be a person who seeks sensual libido or pleasure. You can eat food which is bad for you, but it tastes good. And you can worry about your culinary experience, and your gastronomic experience. And that can be the focus of your life. As Deborah once was said by a Febringen in jest, you have people who will travel thousands of miles just to eat a delicacy. They go all the way to the French Riviera. He didn't say this, but I'm saying, for example, to eat frog's legs or something ridiculous. Like, and they tasted the delicacy. Like, there's more to life than just the palate, the taste of food. Whatever, okay, you eat, fine. Food doesn't have to taste bad. But there'd be people who their whole life is, so to speak, subsumed in the pleasure of the palate. What did the food taste like? How did the food taste? It's like, becomes a whole focus of life. So that's not such an act of Avodas Hashem. And then, of course, if the food is not kosher, you're in a whole different kettle of fish. That's a whole new problem. And then if a person does bad things with the food, it's even worse. So that's the concept of food. And you could eat food. When you eat healthy food, you make a bracha first. You're mindful of Hashem and the mission that He gave us. And you eat in order to be healthy. And you use your good health and wherewithal to serve Hashem. Beautiful. And that's what the table would represent, quite literally. Of course, the table represents beyond food, but when people think of a table, the first thing that comes to mind is food and what was placed on top of the table. Bread, which is food. The menorah, on the other hand, symbolizes serving Hashem in a spiritual way. Most people, if they have to draw a picture of spirituality, will draw a picture of light or a candle or a flame. That's become like the icon of neshama, of spirit. So there's a spiritual way to serve God. You know, learning Torah and so on and so forth. The ilum is be'ech ha'ketedest, small altar upon which was brought incense. This is remez letfilah. This is emblematic of prayer. K'maymer ha'kasuv, as the verse tells us in Tehillim, Psalm 141, that it says, tikoin tfilasik ketedest lefanecha. I arrange my prayer as incense before you. Ubehesim lekach, and in keeping with this, yuvan seder amidosam shel hamizbeach, will be able to understand the way, the placement, the staging of the mizbeach, the menorah, and the shulchan. That all of it was, as we learned, mashuach klapei hamizrach, all set back from the easterly direction. Ve'ilu hamenorah emedes nechach hashulchan. So we have everything, so to speak, set in the last third. And then the Mizbeach was set forward to the east. The Menorah and the Shulchan was set back on the west side. And they had to correspond to each other. They had to be in perfect corollary. So what's the lesson here? HaMizbeach Meshuach Klapi Ikima Klapi HaMizbeach means, if it's set forward in the easterly direction, the first thing you encountered when you walked into the Mishkan would be the Mizbeach. Only after you pass the Mizbeach could you reach the Menorah and the Shulchan. This teaches us. Seder Hayom, the order of a Yid's day, First and foremost, Sarach Liftoyach B'Tfila has to begin with prayer. When we study before davening, it's actually part of our davening. In order that you should not come into shul when you still feel the screech marks and you're still tasting toothpaste and you're still half asleep in davening, instead you spend time studying Torah. And then you put yourself in the proper frame of mind. And after spending time studying Torah and put yourself in the proper frame of mind, then you're able to daven. I once heard that the famous shliach to Argentina, the Beryl Baumgarten, asked the Rebbe that he is having a hard time with his davening, that his davening didn't seem right. So the Rebbe said, make sure to learn before davening. Always learn something before davening. Always learn chassidus before davening. The Rebbe said, even for 5 minutes. But if you learn before davening, automatically it'll have a huge impact on the davening that follows. So the first thing is you start with some learning, especially learning chassidus. You learn chassidus before davening. That puts you in the right frame of mind for davening. Then you can daven like a mensch. That's where it starts. What happens after davening? You can't stay in shul all day. At some point, you got to move on and you got to deal with the realities that Hashem gives us. So, rakla achar mikain, after one finishes davening, nitan lasik b'shar and yonei aveda sayem, then you can get on with your day, whether your day is learning Torah all day, which is great, lucky you, and that's the menorah, or if you're like most of us, that you got a real world to deal with, b'iska be'elam, which represents the idea of the shulchan. So that's the first thing. This is the triangle. First thing you enter into, first thing you encounter, the mizbeach, the small mizbeach, the ketoret. What does the ketoret represent? The concept of davening, the concept of nodding oneself to Hashem. We know the ketoret, which means incense, and Aramaic also means a knot. And you connect yourself, elevate yourself. You're ready now in a higher state of consciousness. When you finish davening, you're poised to take on the day. So when you take on the day, you have to know that the menorah is a medes noichach ha-shulchan. The menorah and the shulchan are in perfect corollary, facing each other. L'lamdeinu, to teach us, she'ez na'agusa shel adam in yonei elam, that the way a person behaves himself in worldly matters, existentially shulchan, that the way a person does this, tzichalies toy emes, as da'agusa haruchnis, it has to be in corollary with his spiritual level, which is a representation of the menorah. For example, Rambam says it this way, in the laws of deis, having the right attitudes. In the fifth chapter, the Rambam begins by saying, and this is a quote, "Kishem shahachacham niker b'chachmasei ubedei Yosef." Just like you could see if somebody is wise, discerning, and intelligent, by virtue of his wisdom or his attitudes to life. V'hu mekubo behem mishara am. You could see muvdo. Pardon me, behem mishara. He's separated from everybody else. He's got a different perspective. He's got a different way of looking at things. He has a wise way of looking at things. His attitudes are measured, balanced, intuitive, insightful. He's a different kind of person. He looks at the world differently. So just like the Chacham is different in the way he looks at the world and understands the world, kach tzarech sheyia nikir b'maisav. So he also has to be set aside in the way the Chacham behaves. B'machalei, mashkeo, in the way he eats, and the way he drinks, so to speak. So if a person is a chacham and they eat like a gargaron, like a person who fresses, and they lose all inhibition when they finally sit down on a plate of food, or a person in his interactions is nasty and not polite and mean-spirited and bull in a china shop, there's a problem. If you have all that wisdom, the wisdom that you learned, the attitudes that you developed should also be reflected in the behavior you exhibit. And the Rambam says, "V'yiu." In doing so, you call ma'ha ma'isim ha'elu noyim u'mtikonim b'yesed. Then all of his behavior will be in the most beautiful and choreographed fashion. And this is the idea of the shulchan and the menorah. They cannot be separate and apart. One has to be reflected in the other. You're a Talmud Chacham. You have the right ideas. You have the right attitudes. This has to be reflected in the way you behave and interact with the regular, everyday reality, with the world, so to speak, on a regular basis. And so the staging of the Mishkan is actually staging for life.
So is taking pleasure in food a Averus Hashem?